so quietly and listen for your names. President Larson.
Here.
Vice President Babinger.
Present.
Vice President Brown.
Here.
Vice President Ripka.
Present.
Vice President Bourgeois.
Present.
Governor Flamin.
Here.
Councilor Lynn.
Yes.
Councilor Anderson.
Yes.
Councilor Rates. Councilor Mollett. Proxy for Councilor Hussaini. Councilor Belak. Councilor Cutter. Councilor Lee.
Yeah. What's up?
Oh, here. Sorry.
Councilor Hussein.
Yes.
Councilor Staff. Quiet down, please. Quiet down, please.
Councilor Wall is here.
She is. Councilor Staff, are you here? Councilor C.
Here.
Councilor, I'm sorry, it's a live stream. Councilor Yao. Councilor Roseland. Councilor Vos.
Yes.
Councilor Agwan. Councilor Hanasek. Councilor Chung. Councilor Ahmad. Councilor Sunday.
Hi.
Councilor Nguyen.
Here.
No, I said Nguyen, not Kim yet. Councilor Azuki. Councilor Hadoosh.
Here.
Now Councilor Kim. Councilor DePinto.
Here.
Councilor Agarwal.
Here.
Councilor Izzy. Councilor Bruce the live stream. And Councilor Belcourt.
Maybe we should. Did you get me, John?
Yep.
Cool, thanks.
All right, quiet down, please. We're getting started here. If you're grabbing food, please do so quietly. We'd like to respectfully acknowledge our university and our students union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We're grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Soto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papas Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. Councilor Sunday, do we have someone to facilitate the smudging ceremony for us today?
Can I make a quick announcement?
Sure.
So, super quick. We'll unfortunately not be smudging today. However, in the future, I'm looking to get medicine, so we should have it in every council going forward.
Okay. Thank you, Councilor Sunday. Announcements for me. Our next meeting will take place on Tuesday, February 26th, back here. We're back on the once every 2 week schedule after that hectic 5 or 6 meetings in the last span of the last 3 weeks. So we are back on the regular schedule here unless something else comes up. Other than that, I don't have any other speakers business. Those of you who are interested in running for the executive elections and following that, the council elections, will have to take leaves of absence from council during the election period.
Not council, just exec.
I believe the council would do as well if you're running for council.
Last year I did.
Yes.
Yes. If you are running for a yes or no side of a plebiscite or referendum, do you also have to, whatever you call it, stand aside or whatever? Or is that only if you're running?
Excellent question. I don't think so. I will confirm all of those things, and I will send out an email before the end of the week with the procedure for taking a leave of absence. Yes, Councilor Buckler. It's a tough thing. I don't think you're gonna have to. I will confirm with that, and I'll double check some all season things and see what we can figure out. But I think that should be fine. It's those who are running for executive elections, especially, and I believe council elections as well. But that might be mistaken there. But I'll send out more information by the end of the week regarding that, how to take the leave of absence. Okay. So we will get started with our presentations for this evening. Beginning with our first presentation, PLEM moves to allow a presentation regarding the University of Alberta Board of Governors, presented by Michael Prater, the Chair of the Board of Governors. This presentation by the Chair will explain who the Board of Governors is and what they do, followed by a brief Q&A session. Is there a second for this? Vice President Bourgeois, thank you very much. Is there any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none. Mr. Chair, you have...
thank you very much. It's really quite an honor, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and I appreciate the invitation. And as the Chair of the Board of Governors, I really am excited to be able to indicate a couple of things about the Board itself. And the first I want to indicate the terrific leadership from the two individuals in this room who sit on the board representing the student union, and that's Reed over here and Levi right next to me. So much appreciated. And I think it's important for the rest of you to realize the value that they bring to the board and the kinds of both questions and the committees that they sit on. As we try as a board to do a good job for everyone on campus, and we need those voices of the two of them, and whoever will be new next year and the year after, as well as in the past years. So thank you very much for the fact that we have the two members that are part of our board. I wanted to say just a couple of factual kinds of things, and that we do have 21 members on the Board of Governors, 15 of them are publicly appointed by the provincial government, and the provincial government has a process that's a public process. People apply. When we had a number of openings, we had 120 applications for people who wanted to sit on the board. The process includes narrowing that number down to a manageable number. And then there were, I think, 10 individuals that were interviewed. They had an interview by either the Minister of Advanced Education or the Minister's staff as such. And then the Minister and his office decide which of the individuals that will be come forward to sit on our board. Part of that process is they also look at who is already on the board and what kinds of things that they may wish to have here that haven't that would be useful in representation that is there. I'll get back to that in a moment. Members are appointed from the public for 3 years. After 3 years, individuals can apply for a second 3-year term. By a quirk, the chair can apply for up to 10 years, 3 plus 3 plus 3, and somehow there's a 1 in there. Somebody couldn't count when they put that in place, I think, is what it is. In actual fact, I don't think there's been any chair in the last probably 40 years that served more than 6 years at kind of a maximum. Some have served less, and there have been a few that have served more than 6 years, but in recent memory, not significantly. Alberta is unique in that in boards that are appointed by the other provincial governments across Canada. In essence, they appoint the members, and then the members of the board appoint the chair. Alberta does it differently. I was appointed as chair. I was not on the board before. And that's true of all the institutions in Alberta. They appoint the chairs directly. And that's always a bit of interest to be the new person on the board where everybody else has already been there, and you come in and you're supposed to be running the show. And instead I was run, kind of that, and had to learn how to do things and who people were. I think it's important, I think, from my perspective, that I wanted to say a few things about some of the kinds of things, the kinds of people and what they bring to the board that we currently have at the University of Alberta. And so, for example, we have an individual on our board whose background is a professional communicator and public relations. Many years have been the career of that individual. And so they bring those skills plus others to the board. We have an individual who is a teacher, a principal, and then a superintendent, also from a mid-sized city in Alberta, that is on our board, but comes from that particular kind of background there. We also have a full-time professional artist, a person who's in, I think, late 50s, early 60s, that has worked as a professional artist all of their life and have supported themselves and their family as a professional artist. There isn't anybody that remembers that we've ever had a professional artist on our board before, even though the university has thousands of individuals who have trained here as artists, and that I think is the first time we've ever had a real live artist who's made their living kind of thing on our board of directors. We also have the former city manager of Calgary, who sits on our board as well, and I mentioned that because as the city manager of Calgary dealt with a budget of over $2 billion, about 18,000 employees, a very diverse world that they had to live in. And sometimes when we think about university and people talk about it, how diverse it is, that individual understands what a big institution is all about. And even though this is different, it has some similarities to that. We have a financial officer that is the CFO from Blue Cross, who also is a Francophone, and that sits on our board of governors. And we have an archivist and librarian that sits on our board. And that's just to give you a little idea of the range of kinds skills and backgrounds that people bring to the Board of Governors. And I think that's important when you think about Alberta and you think about the fact that a board should represent the people of the city and the province, and the kinds of backgrounds that you would all be able to somewhat identify with, and if they bring that knowledge of the diversity. And I think that that spectrum of diversity comes through in a couple other areas. These days, it's very significant, and the provincial government has made it important that we look at gender. And currently on the Board of Governors, we have 10 men and 10 women. So we're 50-50. We have one opening, so when the new person is there, unless they're androgynous or bi, we'll have one more male or female, we think. Kind of thing of that when that is done. So that's been a very conscious effort on the part of the provincial government. And I think, in my opinion, as a board chair, it has made a huge difference at our board to have that kind of gender balance as well. And I think that speaks to the Alberta of today that we are all living in. Over the last I suppose 2 years or more, the Board of Governors has spent a great deal of time both reviewing what it is we do and how we are organized, and whether we need to reorganize so that we can do things in a better, more productive way. And I think that, in fact, we're well down that road to having moved quite significantly, and we really have kind of settled on the fact that our role as Board of Governors is hindsight, oversight, and foresight. And the notion of being able to look a bit at the back and see what's going on, to look at what's happening today, and what we think is as important, particularly for a board, is some foresight. What do we see in front of us? What do we think is going to be significant for you and those that come behind you as we identify Alberta, the city of Edmonton, other cities, the country, and that are important for the university to be able to respond to. And that context and culture of today's Alberta and the future is, I think, where we bring perhaps our best ability to influence the university. And sometimes that is in ways that you would not be a surprise, the support for things like AI. And sometimes it's in other areas where, for example, we have been spending time as a board looking at gender parity among the professional staff, where we've been looking at sexual harassment and the policies that are needed for that. In partly to respond and also to indicate that's the kind of world that we live in today and the way that we want to see and we think are important for the university to be able to live within that kind of parameters, that kind of context, and that you all have the experience that comes with that. And the future orientation, I would say, is much more embedded now in how we do our work and is very different than what I think has been happening in the last number of years at the board level. And I think that's an achievement of the fact that we have a really diverse board. They come from a variety of different backgrounds. They're able to talk about things from a different kind of perspectives, and yet, as we move forward, are able to put things together that make a difference. I think that one of the other key areas of the board is measuring success. And we do a number of things. Each member of the board fills out an evaluation of its own performance every year, identifying how they have managed, what things have worked, what haven't, what is best. Board members also fill out an evaluation of the board and how it operates. And part of that, they have to fill out about how the chair has been. Not my favorite exercise to read, but anyway, that's all part of it as well. So the board chair gets evaluated as part of that. But it is looking at the board as a group, and then how do we do? We also evaluate the president of the university, because the president is hired by the board. And the contract is signed by myself, and the president that they work under, and we also do that evaluation on an annual basis. And that evaluation includes not only all board members participating in that, but we also interview or speak with a variety of other individuals on campus and off campus that would have some knowledge of the president and the work that the president does. And then we put all that information together. And as a board, we finalize the evaluation of the president. We are expected, required to do that. We would be the body if we decided that the president, if we would advise the president on the results, also ask for goals for the next year. If for some reason the board evaluation was such that it was extremely problematic, we would be the ones to decide whether the president was time to go, kind of thing in that, because we could make that decision. We aren't making that decision. They don't want to leave any with that right now, but we have that responsibility, and that's the responsibility every member on the board would participate in that discussion and debate if that occurred, if we needed to do that. So in some ways that's a little bit about the board that I think in terms of the kind of who we are. And I did bring stuff that about each board member here so that you can take a look at who it is that supposedly appointed by the provincial government to ensure that you are receiving the education that the province would like to see happen. And I think that it's valuable for you just to have a sense of that diversity of and the kinds of background that people come. Briefly on a personal note, I think that the work that you all do here and your predecessors and those of the future are a major part of ensuring that the experience of young people or any age student is the kind of thing that we want for everyone, and that they are participating in how the university is run, what's important at the university, what would make a difference, how they could improve or make it a better place. And I think that we come at that from a board level of understanding there are many different sectors, alumni, a senate, professional staff, students, both undergraduate and graduate students, the people who work here at the university every day who are non-academic, and the board. It's all of those groups together that help to make this really a leading institution in the country, and ensures that we are an engaged university, that we have students who do well academically, and not only well, but we have some excellence in what is happening here at the University of Alberta, and that's extremely important to me, but I think to all those other sectors and all the members of the board. On the lighter side, I like being part of parades. I get to head up the gold, green and gold parade, and I'm going to, again this year, head up the pride parade. It's great fun. I like doing that, kind of thing. That, so that's one of the personal things I like, as the, being the board chair, that I get to do. And I think the other one I would say is that the personal satisfaction that I get, and it's more than satisfaction. Every year, the university graduates nearly 9,000 individuals, and they cross the stage, and I shake a lot of hands, kind of thing. That it is really a moment, I think, at a time that I can't tell you how impressive it is to see 9,000 individuals leaving here and saying they've done it, they're graduating, they're success, they're moving into the world, and I know they will manage well because of the background and education that they've had here. And that it makes every moment that I spend here, and I think for all the board, an unbelievable experience to be able to do that and watch one after the other for you and the accomplishments that you all have made. And that, and I don't think in society there's very little that anything is done elsewhere that can talk about how we've done with 9,000 people that are going to be the kind of citizens that we want. It's an achievement that is remarkable. And I think it's important to keep that in mind for all of us, and certainly for me personally. And so with that, I'm happy to answer questions.
Would you like to moderate questions, or would you just like to take them from the hands?
Sure. Okay. Anybody, yes, I can't, Emma.
Thank you so much for your presentation. It's very interesting stuff. Good to learn more about the board for sure. I was just wondering if you could go over kind of like the top three or top one challenges that the board is facing this year and how you would take it.
Well, of course, we always face financial challenges, so we could go in that forever. I kind of think of that too. I think a couple of the challenges that are significant to the board. One is internal, our reorganization and trying to do things differently, and I think that we're moving along in that one fairly well. I think we're also looking at the fact that we would like to be able to hire additional professors that were in the age range of like early 30s to early 40s, that we fear that we have a lot of people who are there with academics that are getting a little older, and we aren't bringing in enough new young, and that I think is one of the things that we do a little struggling with, that looking at the future. I think the other is in looking at what kind of changes we see ahead. For all post-secondary education in Alberta, one of those one of the big ones that if we've only started to do some significant work is as you look across Canada, the number of young people in this province that go to post-secondary education is the lowest in the country. Every other province has more young people that go on beyond secondary. And although there are a number of reasons for it, some of it is because we haven't done enough to pull them in. The other is that at the same time, we have the youngest population. We have a huge bulge of younger people who are now in grade 7, 8, 9, 6, 7, 8, 9, moving on to high school. We're going to be moving there, and there's no place for them to go when they finish, because virtually all post-secondary institutions in Alberta are full. And we would estimate that there need to be somewhere between 80 and 90,000 new seats across the province. And for a university like us, that would mean probably 12 to 14,000 additional seats. It took the same proportion that we do right now. And that's not in 1 year. That's probably over a 5 to 10 year period. But that's a lot of new seats and a lot of that to be done. Our concern is that that's not really being looked at or talked about very much. So that a couple. Yes, Kim.
Hi. There's a okay. I just had a thank you first for your presentation and congratulations again for your second term as the chair of Board of Governors. So my question. My question might be a little bit more specific, but I just wanted to ask this question because it's one of the important issues that I think the board and students had a little bit more struggle about last year. So from the last board meeting in 2018, there was a decision to increase international tuition fee by 3.14%, and then the proposal was a substantial increase by 2% continuing on, right? And that was because at that time we did not expect to get any funding from the government. And that was the situation board had to face to work to get the money from. But I think in current situation, we like after that decision, we got money from our government. And secondly, I saw recently the report that the increase in international tuition allowed us to have more surplus of a budget. And the last portion is that students who are continuing based on the post-secondary report or something, that students who are continuing, who are in the system, is expected to have the same tuition fee as they finish their four-year degree. So these three facts already kind of contradicts like last year's decision, but last year's decision was more like longitudinal one that has passed. So I was just wondering, instead of having the discussion when it is March again, if have board had chance to actually go over that topic for a bit to actually see what's going on? Or something like that?
All right, turn on. The board has started that discussion. There are, I don't know why it's there we go.
I have control of that.
Oh, you control, okay. All right, for the upcoming year, which would be 2019-20, things will kind of stay the way they were last year. I mean, it'll be whatever is decided. And the provincial government has again, and has before, indicated that the fee for students outside of the country should be the total cost to provide the education. Okay, and that's the principle that it's on, and that's what they go after with us in that. However, after next year, what the provincial government has come down with as the policy is that we will need to indicate to a foreign student what the cost will be over the term that they're here. With some drawbacks, is that a four-year term, or if they're here a six-year, what happens? We don't know the details of that. But it would be the notion that if you're coming for 4 years, let's just pick that number, that you would know what that was going to be for those 4 years. Now, what it's also done is that is to be, the universities and colleges are able to do their estimate of what that total would be for those 4 years. that's where it's going to be significant, because we need to estimate what we think it might be. It might be more than that in the end. Each year might have been, or it might have been less. And so it's going to be tricky. But the notion is that you would know what it would be for those 4 years. Now, the other part of that that's going to be complicated is if you come and you've come into the general sciences, but you switched to engineering, kind of thing, that what does that mean for what we indicated would cost you? Because in engineering programs, it would cost you more if you change. How do we do that? And we don't know how we're going to do all that yet. But what is coming is something that you should know, probably, kind of thing. That. Does that answer your question? Kind of, it's going to be complex.
Yes. I like that. Can I just have a quick follow-up?
Of course.
Is there anywhere that, so you were saying, students were coming outside of Canada having the burden of entire education, right? Which makes sense. So my question is there anywhere in current University of Alberta website or anywhere where we can see how much does it cost to actually teach one student?
It would be, yes. Somewhat that it is true, but it varies for different institutions. I mean, that the cost for students it differs. Actually, the University of Alberta and University of Calgary are among the large institutions that are the highest in the country, kind of thing, or almost the highest in the country. U of T is higher, but otherwise there. So you can see what that is. And I, off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly what it is, but it must be 20,000 something, 27,000. Somebody's foreign student might know that. It's a lot. Kind of think of that too.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Becky, yes.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm just wondering if you find this kind of like a political aspect to the role at all. Like, I know last year there was like maybe, I guess, some tension between the minister and the president of the university. Like, I'm wondering, like, if you found like that kind of political aspect of things to be fun, or like if you enjoy that aspect of the role, or anything like that.
We won't go into enjoyment, but it certainly is. And quite frankly, the fact that I'm appointed by the provincial government and others in the other institutions, it is that notion that somehow there is a relationship between the provincial government to the university through me. Not for everything by any means, but as part of that. So clearly there is a political role that comes with this, without the question, and for all the other board chairs, kind of thing. That I would say that there were last year there were certainly some. The things that between the provincial government and ourselves that were not were difficult and from my perspective perhaps did not fold the ways that I thought were necessarily the way they should have. And it took quite a bit of doing, not just me, but I was certainly heavily involved meeting with the minister, meeting with the premier, and anybody else who would listen to try to work that out. And I think in September, October, that there was a recognition, there was a thing on the minister's website that kind of said that it was inappropriate action. There was both the premier and the minister came to attend a couple of events here to kind of say we're back on good grounds again, and I was involved with that. It's never easy, kind of like that, but. That's life.
Thank you so much for coming. It was really exciting to hear your presentation. I was wondering if you could touch on what you think the most, exciting or positive thing the board has done in the past few years while you were chair.
The most exciting and positive, excuse me. Ooh, that's a tough one. Because we do lots of different things. I think that one that doesn't get much recognition, and again, there are a ton of other people who do the groundwork, but for the about the sixth year in a row the work that is done that has been produced, that's the audits of the expenses and all the rest for the university, like which goes to the Auditor General of the province, came back saying everything was fine for about the fifth year in a row, kind of thing, and that no issues and that kind of thing, and that and it isn't spectacular, and it's one of those after the sight kind of thing that there. The other one that's a little bit more, I think, that I think the board has been quite positive, quite pleased with, is the comprehensive institutional plan for the public good. We do find ways to keep at that and to see some things that are done in relation to that, and I think the board has felt fairly positive about that work. What it did, we the plan was approved by the board in the end. That's part of our job as well, and so we had a chance to go through and work on that as well. So thanks.
Do you have a follow up to that?
Yes. Reed?
Thank you so much for coming again, Michael. On behalf of the students' union as well, I do want to give you a great big thank you. I also just wanted to point out a couple of things that I really appreciate your consistent transparency, your openness, and you're willing to talk with myself and other student representatives around things like the new budget model, the governance system, and just the tremendous amount of time that you put into the role. For example, folks, it used to be an absolute fight to even speak to a chair, not even 5 years ago. Now it's lovely to have open and decent conversations with arguably the leader of the University of Alberta. So thank you so much for that, Michael. It's very much appreciated. Michael also, one more fun fact that I think Michael forgot to mention is he likes to make people sing. At every single one of our board meetings in some way, shape, or form. A special thank you for making governance enjoyable, in particular for the board. My question for you is, we are coming up on our election cycle that starts actually this Friday, technicalities, or Thursday, yeah, I don't know, depends on which way you want to say it. I was just wondering, what advice would you give to a student who may be interested in being the board representative, or to somebody who might be interested in running?
Well, I love elections. I've been five of my own things that, advice is always tainted by the fact that, you know, I'm from another generation and all that kind of thing, that too. But I think that what I would advise is that if you think you're interested in being a representative, and that you're clear that of why you want to have that post. And by clear, I mean two or three reasons that are there, not, you know, 50 of them or whatever. Is I think that also starts to resonate with people rather than it's just general. That's it'd be nice to be that. It's important to be able to indicate you see that whoever runs for that see that as an important avenue for students to be part of the governance of the university. And in many ways, it's not very glamorous kind of thing in that, because you do your work with us over there kind of thing in that. No one else sees much of it kind of thing in that. And I think significant that you see it as important, or whoever is running. That is there. And then I think that you run a good campaign. I've always been one of those people, and I still believe it, that a campaign is the most important part. And many people, I think, get elected because of their good campaigns. And I would mention a former student union, he was an employee, the current mayor. I mean, the current, those of you who are too young to know, when the current mayor was first elected to city council in 2007, he defeated an incumbent, and he had a campaign that's the best I've ever seen at the city level, and no one would have speculated that he would win, kind of thing, as an outsider. He was running against an incumbent who was quite well-known and vocal, and the campaign was incredible, kind of thing like that. And by meeting no one, there was, in those days, you know, a lot of the influence about and comments about elections came through newspapers and radio and television, really in the early ages of the social media, and that. I was doing the color commentator at one of the TV stations about the election, kind of thing, and that. And so I was watching, and when the results started to come in, and you know, see the numbers, and that within the first seven or eight polls that came in, and there were probably 28 or 29 polls altogether, I could see that Don was ahead, not only ahead, but that it was, the distance was already too far to be able to make it up. And I was saying to the rest of the TV staff, I said, oh, Don's going to win. And they were like, what? And they said, no. And they had no one covering his campaign. And there was this flurry of them calling some of their others where they're out that they needed to go to Don's office because they did not expect that he would be able to be an incumbent. And I remember them saying to me, how can this be going on? And I said, simple. He worked hard. He's got a really good campaign, better than I've ever seen anybody do, kind of thing of that. And campaigns make a difference. So I would say, be serious about the campaign. Do a really good job. Don't stop until it's over. Keep up with your classes, probably, but otherwise, keep going.
Thank you very much. We have run out of time. Does anyone would like to extend our question time by 15? I see one. That appears to be it. So that will conclude our presentation for this evening. Thank you very much. All right, we'll move on to our next presentation here. Next presentation is Larson moves to allow a presentation on council order papers and standing orders. Council staff President Larson to collect and present options for updates to council standing orders and order papers. This presentation will outline the broad ideas and updates, give an opportunity for input, and outline the next steps to complete an updated standing orders. Is there a second for this presentation? Governor Plamen, thank you very much. Any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none, President Larson? Was that the one you sent me, or is it a different one?
There's two.
They're both in that email?
Yes.
Looks like folks are just going to pull it up so I can kind of see what we go through it too.
All right. Cool, so standing.
Sweet.
All right, so standing orders review and next steps. So we've had a couple of roundtable discussions. My thanks to everybody for putting this together as well. And we've had some opportunity for people to get feedback online, and there's been a couple of documents that have been running. So I was tasked by the folks here at our last round, sort of kind of pull that all together, try and come up with a little bit of next steps, and to generally just say, hey, here's the ideas that have been put out there. What do you think of them? Let's move on with some other stuff. Cool. So, kind of a broad review, and this will be a very short presentation, folks. It's mostly facilitated so you can give me all the feedback. A broad review of the things that we heard and that were written down. So, there's kind of a want for more open discussion, generally a little bit more of people being able to give, I would call, free discussion, or what's the word, in-committee discussion would be the technical term. And a little bit more free-flowing debate. Sometimes the rules can be very restrictive, and it's been hard for people to kind of grasp entirely what that means. We talked a lot about more opportunity for public comment and ensuring that if people take the time to come to our spaces, that they have the opportunity to speak to the items on the agenda. There was a desire for talking circles, so the idea that we all have an opportunity to give feedback, as well as other feedback mechanisms, whether those are anonymous or not, or otherwise. There was a lot of want for feedback mechanisms. I put a couple asterisks here because these have the connotation. There was a want for an improved training and support for Students' Council. I'm happy to say that we're going to move forward with this right away instead of waiting. That's something that we can do internally with Discover Governance and hopefully can have in place within the next couple of months. Oh, and look at that. I didn't even know you were here, Rebecca. Awesome. A couple of things that will happen is we're going to be changing up how GovCamp works, how training works, and generally how the first few months of student council works. So that way we can ensure that when people come into the roles, they're as supported as possible. Finally, in your budget principles that you've already passed, there is a line for more support for students council and these kind of things. There was also a want for community building, so for counselors to have some more community building opportunities between ourselves and also the people at large and the people who come to visit us. I've got some more specific stuff on this later, plus the asterisk. Some things I think that we should keep in mind during this conversation that are just general things that are that have kind of come up throughout all this. We do work under time constraints. I'm actually quite proud of the fact that our meetings are only 3 hours now. There are people in the room who have experienced 6 hour plus long meetings. It is not fun. It is actually quite horrendous, and I think a very big barrier to people participating in council. So keep in mind that we do have time constraints. So whatever if we want to shift things, the time has to come from somewhere, or we have to build more opportunity, one of those two things. Bylaw mandates, so there are a number of things that we can't change in standing orders that have to be there because of bylaw. Don't get me wrong, we can also change bylaw, but we're talking about standing orders right now. Bylaw does mandate that our base operating system is Robert's Rules. However, standing orders are our own rules, so we can change them or completely overwrite that if we feel that we want to. But if the entire system breaks, we do fall back to Robert's Rules. We do have legislative procedures, so within bylaw there is a way for policy to come forward, for bylaws to come forward, and other things like that that can't change, such as budget and other things. We are mandated to have standing orders, so we can't just not have standing orders. We have to come up with a system to govern ourselves, which I think is quite important. And finally, we do have to give written reports. Myself, committee chairs, executives, BOG rep, and a couple of other things are bylaw mandated reports that have to happen a few times a year. Our community is really important. I think that when we talk about how we're going to engage with or build rules, we should really think about it, about what our community expects of us and what our constituents expect of us. One thing I can say for certain is that our community does expect a very strong governance system. No matter what the rules are, they expect us to adhere by them, to follow them, and to generally govern ourselves in some sort of way. And finally, we are a deliberative, democratic, and unicameral system. So what that means is we do deliberate. We do toss ideas out. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not so good. And we try and find ways to work with things. We are democratic. We do have to. We do take votes. We do just make decisions at the end of the day. And we are all elected to these chambers. So you are representatives, which is a very important thing. And we're unicameral. That's a very fancy word that just means we are the governing board. There isn't another board that can override us. There isn't another system that can tell us no. We are a single governing board for the Students' Union. You are the highest governing body. So these are the suggestions in the working document. So there is a working document for a lot of these changes. It's the Standing Orders Review. Thank you to Governor Flanagan. For having curated that and kept track of it. The things that are already in there for suggestions for things that we do are things like a standard closed session of every council meeting right at the end. So a closed session is the sessions that we've been having a little bit more regularly about strategy and about political aspects of the organization. People can debate if this is important or not. I would suggest it is going into what could be a very, very contentious year for students' unions across Alberta. There is some suggestions on how we list our information items. So we submit so many information items, there's a lot of reports, and our combined packages are getting over 100 pages almost every single meeting, which is actually quite a bit of reading if you are gonna go through all of it. So there's some suggestions there. There's some suggestions to limit the length of presentations from 30 minutes down to 15. I actually don't mind that. It just makes people be shorter and quicker, and we'll see what other people have to say. There's a new nomination procedure, which is that has been something that I pitched a long time ago when I wrote up, that's kind of floating around in there. It's something that I can go over with everybody, but generally the system would be, instead of doing nominations from the floor, like we do now, where you just raise your hand and go for it. We introduced a little bit of a system where you could put in a written nomination as well. So that way, if you wanted to do a written one instead of doing it from the floor, you could do that. And that would be kind of the standard as well, so you can save some time on nominations. Does anybody have any questions about those before I continue on? This document is open to all of council. I highly recommend that people take a look over it in the near future. We can make sure to send this back out to everybody so it's right in their inbox. And I do want to do one thing. The updates to next year's proceedings, which is basically that we are considering changing up a little bit of how the first few months of council works to focus way more on training. Rebecca and the executive have been kind of going over this over the last few weeks. Basically, at every council meeting at the beginning of the summer, there would be some sort of professional development, which is basically like, here's how it works. Here's how all these things work. Please, if you have any questions, yada, yada, yada. And it would be almost mandatory because you'd have to be here for attendance, which I think would be a fantastic way to ensure that everybody's kind of on a level playing field for how we function. Suggestions that I have heard that I think still need to be discussed but haven't been written down anywhere. There's the concept of a consent agenda for things like our reports, reviews, and updates. For everybody's context, a consent agenda is basically, there's a certain number of items within the agenda that are routine. So like, let's say executive reports, those happen every meeting. Our reports from our committees and a few other things, or even reviews or updates, like I would call them minimal reviews or updates. So if a policy was reviewed and they only changed three or four words, is there a need to debate that policy in full? So the idea of a consent agenda is that you dispose of the entire consent agenda at the beginning of the meeting. You basically ask, is there anybody who is opposed to the consent agenda? If there is nobody opposed, we just move past that business and we just don't do it. We call it good. It could save a lot of time, in particular around our reports. The reports that we give eat up about 30 minutes of every meeting, which is significant. There has been a lot of talk about an open comment period, so baking into our legislative procedure, like when we do bylaws or policies, about ensuring that members of the public can comment in these chambers on those proceedings. I don't really know how that would work. I would love to hear people's suggestions. There's a couple of people who said, well, right at the end of everything, and maybe shorten up the question period and a few other things. Standardized community programming through CAC and DG. This is basically that like CAC at the beginning of the year, where at some point in time would pre-plan every single like council event, and it would get advertised as like a time to engage with councillors, and for councillors would all be at this particular event, something like hockey games or club fairs or something like that. Not a bad idea to allow for people to plan more, but it's more of a commitment. Right now you already commit a lot of time. You would also have to make more commitments to your social time, which is something people to discuss. Finally, attendance required activities that are outside of council meetings. Things like round circles, the blanket exercise, and mandatory training. This is actually a lot more contentious than I thought it was, because attendance required basically for, like, makes it a part of your legislative mission as a councillor, or as your representative mission as a councillor. So if we force people to be there, or soft force people to be there, it becomes a part of your duties. Next steps for this process. So like, this is all the stuff that's going on right now. These are things that you can all deliberate or not. The next steps that I'm going to suggest right now is that there's still the online feedback form up online. There's been two suggestions put into it. I would suggest that people use that feedback form as the most broad generic thing you can possibly do. So if you're like, I feel like we should just have this, just dump it in there so that way we can have a record and ensure that somebody who's a policy nerd like myself can look at it and try and figure out something. The standing orders working document, I highly suggest that everybody takes the time to read that over, as that will likely be the document that we pass as a council to be our standing orders. That would become our new piece of rules. What I would suggest from today, this is just me giving you all this update as to what I see and what's going on, is that this is placed on the CAC agenda for the next two meetings. That way you have a couple of opportunities to come and give comment and to write a little bit. I can continue to follow up and do a lot of the writing as necessary. I'm just good at technical jargon at this point, so I'm happy to do that. If somebody else wants to take it up, please do so as well. Finally, CAC has two options. They can recommend to council a new standing orders. If there is going to be an incredibly large wholesale change to standing orders, I recommend this, which just means that we would all deliberate it in this chamber, not at CAC's table. Or CAC also does have the mandate to just update it on their own. They can say, this is good, we're going to do this, and everybody's had ample time for feedback. No matter what system we come up with, I highly suggest that we all commit to going to a training for that new system. If not, I can give a presentation about how some of the nuances within it would work and other things going forward. So basically, if we follow the idea of having this on the agenda for the next two CAC meetings, and then CAC can provide a recommendation or an update, we can have new standing orders completed before the end of our terms, which basically means anybody who's going to be here next year would be the ones who would be helping with the training to get it implemented, and all new counselors would be kind of grandfathered into the new system, which I think is probably the best way to make sure that these things actually have an effect. Questions? That's basically it. It's just a brain dump for all of you as to where we're at.
Can you just go back to the slides for you, please?
Two slides, yeah.
Are you aware of any other like university boards or any other councils that have attendance required activities like this, or would we be unique in this?
Ooh. Let me think for a second. I know Calgary has attendance requirements. I don't know if they have attendance required activities. I can't say for certain. I think we may be unique if we did it, but we're unique in almost everything we do because we're the best. Yeah. Or we're just trying to get better. I don't know. You can pick either way. In this room to give me feedback in particular around the consent agenda idea, because this is one I've pitched to a number of people, in particular around executive reports. Now, I've been listening to executive reports for 3 years, and I do, although I'm old and I kind of like, that's a lot of time, a lot of people are like, we really value those because it's when we get a little bit more information. So I want to hear what people have to think about that. You could always still request from an executive to get more of an update by pulling something from the consent agenda, but it would save us a significant amount of time.
So I'm not directly reflecting on the executive portion of that idea, but with the committee reports, I would really appreciate that being a consent agenda. I think that would just foster a better sense of the committees checking in with one another instead of just preparing something to share in this room. I think if we're forced to write down what's occurring and share that with council there, there's an opportunity for the chairs to check in and review what's being done instead of just being spit out at once. And oftentimes I don't really feel like it's super valuable what the chairs are sharing. Sometimes it is, and so maybe that's when you can opt to say a little bit more, have a question asked about it. But I really like that idea of revolving around the community chairs and their updates.
I just want to second that point because lots of the things we do in the meeting, we are already there in the layer of the agenda. It's important for council to know. So it felt very redundant. I just want to say that bill number 6 is coming up, which you'll be seeing in the bottom suit.
Yeah. Cool. I saw some hands over here.
Sorry, I might, unfortunately, I was not paying enough attention. I apologize.
Yeah.
But was there a talk of chairs writing written reports for each meeting?
Fun fact. We used to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm worried about that because we used to do that and it was so much work on chairs that we got rid of it. At least for myself, I don't know about writing a report each time. It can be a lot of work.
We already managed to write a trimesterly report. It was actually still quite a bit. Yeah, there's a lot of hands. I'm going to go with people who haven't spoken yet, so jump.
I, in as much as I'm in support of this idea, but I also choose to disagree. And here's why. I think most of the executive board are
I'll just disagree, and here's why. I think by the exact, say, reading all the reports loud or saying what they have done, it's one way of engaging with council, and actually by saying it out loud, because not all of us have the time to say, read the whole council document before coming here, or say clearly when they announce or talk about the reports, give us time, A, to ask questions about it, or it gives us time to engage with the exec, and I think it's also more like validates what they're doing, because if it's just in a document out there, we don't see the value of it. You read it, of course, but I say the VP student might say, I've done this, I've gone to this, A, kind of validates as well. So by say keeping it up in the document, not talking about it, it's more like, yeah, well, I don't know what he does, if I skip council meeting. I don't know. I think there's value to engaging and speaking on the reports. At least that's what I prefer, or that's a personal experience. There's a validation in it, and there's an engagement aspect to it, saying, hey, I've done this, I've done that. On the chairs, I don't go to all the committees, so I think it's the same idea, personally, but that's a personal principle. Yeah, that's my input. Thank you.
So unlike Nathan, I wasn't only not paying attention, I wasn't here during most of your presentation, but I am going to bounce off of the committee points from a new chair perspective and someone who's like learning the whole process as he goes along. I do think that having a written report every meeting would be a lot of work for most chairs. However, I think the trimester report would be very valuable, specifically if it always has a very consistent date. Because one of the main issues, I think, with the written report is most of council want to read like an additional 4 or 6 reports every week from all these committee chairs. But if there's a specific 3 times a year where they know they all come out, I think it's an important part of transparency and accountability by all the different chairs' perspectives, especially with something like audit, where you're not exactly going to every week have a particularly exciting news release or nomination committee. But if it's every trimester, it does allow audit to say, here's all the actual audits we completed in a trimester, rather than being like at the end of the year and being like, here's everything we probably hopefully accomplished. So I think the trimester idea is fantastic, but I also understand Nathan's concern with weekly. I think that would be an issue as well.
Catherine?
I was just gonna, I feel like we're all fixated on this point now because you guys brought it up. Like, it sounds cool. Like, I wasn't really thinking about it, like I mentioned, like the reports for like the committees and stuff like that, and like when we do like the talking and all of that, and I think it would be too much to write up everything every time, but I think it's like, I like hearing what people are doing on the different committees. Like, I don't always have time to like go to all of them, so if I was like interested to eventually run, or if someone like was coming, like Shrike comes, or like, I come, like, I think it's interesting. Like, what do they actually do in those committees, and like, what are people actually doing? Like, what does like just like all of the roles and all of the reports that we do? Like, I think they don't all have to be like super long and intense, but I think it's just nice to like hear and to check in, just a little more informal and more like public positions.
All right, we'll go with Kensha and then Nathan and back to John.
Oh my God, I wasn't ready for that. something that I think was interesting that was brought up was Stephen's point about. Like reports from the chairs. I think that's an interesting concept, but I also really do like giving an oral report because I typically add to, because like I submit my report on Thursdays and then I do stuff on Friday and Monday, so I kind of like it. But something that I think that we could move to consent agenda styles is like the policy committee first reading stuff. I know like this year, this council specifically has been giving like extremely robust first principles, and I know that hasn't been the case in previous years. So if the difference between first principles and second principles isn't quote-unquote significant, like if it's just like editorial changes, like could those be things that we put on this like so-called consent agenda? Because I think that would be like, it looks better to have it on the consent agenda than to like vote unanimously and not talk about it at all, I think. So, I don't know.
So, 2 points.
Was there discussion or was the talk around having like a, so there's talk about having on the consent agenda like executive reports, right?
That was just a suggestion.
Because if we did do that, I think that could be valuable as a time saving measure. And then this is crazy, but having like a prime minister's question period where like executives can read the report and, you know, read them, they're accepted, and then counselors can ask questions based on that or not. And second, I'll again say I am not in favor of doing committee bi-weekly reports. As I can't remember if it's in the average relations and reconciliation standing orders or if it's just best practice, but anything I write on behalf of the committee gets approved by the committee first. So I would always be late providing counsel with a written report.
My question is, how does structure look, so say people from outside council, say people from discover governance, or people from the gate, if the staff's actually don't voice out or see what they're doing, how would that provide, say, time or questions for people from the gateway, or how would I say, incoming people learn from what they're doing, how is that going to play out?
Yeah, that's a very legitimate question.
In this debate is something that I think CAC should absolutely have. I think there is, I'm pulling a middle ground on some of these things, in particular the extra stuff that we do on occasion. For people's awareness, like you can pull anything from the consent agenda and be like, we want to discuss this or debate this. Like if one of the executive reports, you're like, I have a question, that's coming up, it would happen and we would talk about it. But it would just be a bit of a saving. Stephen, did you have any more comments there?
Yes. So with the committee reports, I think like there's a bit of back and forth going now, and I understand that perspective a little bit more now. It may be a good middle ground is just like a templated response of like our next meeting is this date. These are the things we discussed in our last meeting. Here's any additional notes. I think me and Michelle come from this perspective where like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because what we are doing is literally going through a process every single week and looking at specific items. Other committees have different sort of group schedules, so I don't know if it's something that we do for some committees or if we come up with separate templates that work for everybody or if it's something we don't work on, but I don't know. I think there's a little bit more that we can explore here.
Okay. Perhaps part of the whole like chair report transition and all of that kind of stuff could be looped into like a committee of the chairs as well. To like avoid, which like was a thing that happened this year, but I think kind of fell to the wayside. I just feel like if you have a committee of or a board next year, and we have five new chairs and three returning chairs, and they can help, and you can just sit down in a meeting and be like, "What the hell is going on? Like, I'm a new chair. I don't get this," and they can be like, "Oh yes, welcome."
Yeah. Any other chairs?
Oh, thanks, John.
Anything else, folks? I got one more presentation, please.
Two questions. Okay, so for the standard closed session, like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of, like, torn with that one. Like, it seems like a good idea, but it also, like, I understand people want to have the open dialogue. Is that kind of the thought behind it? But is it also, like, not, I mean, the transparency aspect? I don't know.
Yeah, I in all honesty, that one has me torn a lot, too. I really value when we have our conversations on the public record. The reason why I suggest it is, one, it is pretty standard practice at a lot of board levels because it allows for your executive to give you both like business strategy, so like what are our businesses operations doing, and then two, political strategy. Both things that I can't really talk about publicly, but that we're working on constantly. And in the next year, I can tell you without a doubt, political strategy will be something that the board has to talk about quite often.
First of all, thank you for the presentation. I know you have, like you mentioned, that there's different mechanisms for council to be more open for councilors, but will there be anything for guests of council? Like, will council be more accessible for them to come and talk, given that sometimes they come to council very last minute, so there's not often time to send an email for the other business?
Yeah. That's on the suggestions to discuss. I haven't seen it get written down anywhere yet. I could be creative, but I would like a few people to help me with that because, like, my solution is generally just put in a new system within our legislators running, and then people could comment live. We could also just reform the guest thing. For context, so people know, we had people register as a guest because when we went on live stream, we couldn't really tell who was asking questions, And that made people uncomfortable because you could have, in all honesty, like a brigade of questions coming from random, like A, B, C, or whatever. And sometimes that's not a great deal.
Right, because like this was like a follow-up comment. Like I noticed that there was it was very inaccessible, which is why I ran for council. Mm-hmm. Because of like the same problem as guests. So seeing like us move forward as a council to help our guests and our students would be fantastic.
Okay. I don't know who had the number first. Who wants to jump in here?
We can also ask our guests how they would like to see.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah, wait, Mark, you got any thoughts?
We have one more guest in the back, too, and Amber.
What's that?
Amber!
I don't know. I guess, like, as I mentioned in the round tables, I feel like a lot of times I find that it's hard, or like, I don't remember to always register as a guest, but I also find it hard that being, like, I have questions pertaining to, like, a specific issue during a presentation, but then I'll. Familiar if I'm like even allowed to ask them, so like trying to like find someone to ask a question to me, and then it just gets late, and then like time's up. So just find it like hard about always trying to like ask the best questions, like having to wait till open forum to ask those questions, because by then there's been like 2 hours of other meeting stuff, and I'm like, what was that again? I was wanting to ask.
Yeah, I would highly suggest no matter what, we move question period way up in the agenda. It's pretty unreasonable to ask people to sit through like 2+ hours of stuff when they might just have a very simple question they want to ask. That's something we can probably do. Nathan or Catherine, whoever is ready to go.
I just wanted to reiterate what Mark and Councillor Cutarm has said. I think it'd be very important to allow guests to partake in discussions or debate, especially regarding motions. As council has seen in the past, the guests of council are currently not allowed to provide their thoughts or suggestions on any motions we provide, and oftentimes that can be very limiting, especially if the motion that we are discussing impacts a certain segment of the student population. So personally, I think that students, if they're willing, if they're coming here, and wanting to be involved in the governance process, I believe that they should be able to have their voice heard during motions that will affect them.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that too. I agree that there should be like more opportunities for people to speak. And like, yeah, the whole like open comment period, like having it only like a small period, I think even if you pull it up higher in the agenda, then it's also like they make a comment, but then like they're not engaged in the debate when it's going on. Like later on when there's actually like, you know, good points and stuff, like if they have something good to say. That's also why I got involved with council too, is because like it's just like inaccessible and it's like hard and like, you don't know the rules. And I think if there was like opportunities, I don't know when, but like if we opened it up when it made sense for like people to like engage in conversation, to be like, okay, you're allowed to like speak or something like that, just like, and also giving them opportunity to explain what they could do. I was gonna make another point too about the about the nominations. Okay, so like if we did the nominations, like how you were saying, where you had to like write it up and like send it in, I wonder if that would like decrease the amount of people. Like I know sometimes like it just like it's like popcorn and people are like, I nominate you, and it's like becomes kind of fun and like not so serious. But like I feel like there'd be a lot less people would get nominated, and like especially in the beginning when you don't know the rules, and it's like, okay, so I have to write up this formal thing and like about this person, and I think like people would be maybe intimidated by that to like send in. So I wonder if that would like just, you would only have the people who are super engaged that would be on committees.
I'll just really quickly on that point. One of the things I've heard repeatedly is that it can be very intimidating to take a nomination from the floor and to come up with a speech last second for one of those seats. There are people who think it through beforehand. I do think that a nomination system, something new is needed. Like the way we do it is so ad hoc and a little bit, as already mentioned, ridiculous sometimes. But yeah, point well taken about making sure it's accessible no matter what we do.
We have run out of time for 30 minutes. Are anyone wishing to extend by 15?
I'll mention that like this debate can continue at CAP. Like we're basically getting into weed stuff now. But yeah, keep it in mind, write it down. Please use the submission form. We'll make sure to resend it out tonight and we'll get to it. Okay.
So there's no motion to extend? All right. With that, we go to our second presentation from President Larson. Larson moves to allow presentation in regards to an update on the Strategic Planning Committee process. President Larson will give an overview of the progress of the Strategic Planning Committee and provide a rough draft strategic plan and timeline for the strategic plan's competition.
Oh,
I think it's supposed to say completion. Typo, that's okay. Is there a second for this presentation? Mr. President Brown, any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none.
Cool. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks, folks. We've been working on the draft strategic plan for most of the year now. Before I get started, a really big thank you to all the members of the Strategic Planning Committee. It has been a massive effort, and we've come together a lot of times, and it is a lot of hours. It's like almost every week for Robert. It's all excited. It was every week for months, so thank you so much for your input and your time, both the student members and our members of our team who took the time to do that. Just before I jump into the whole thing, I did submit a draft of the strategic plan to the information item, so you have that available to you. Also, this is intended to be a very quick overview of where we're at. If you want to give really long feedback, we're going to be developing a mechanism, and I'll go over that in a minute as well. So just so everybody knows where we're at, so strategic plans are something that we did actually way long ago in the 80s, and then we kind of gave it up for a while, and then we were like, we should do that again, because it really helps us to have long-term goals. So in 2011, the strategic plan bylaw was established. We wrote our first strategic plan. In 2015, it was reviewed and revised, and now we're to the next revision year. Just so everybody knows, like, this process, although it has to happen after every 5 years, it doesn't necessarily have to end right away. This can be an ongoing process if council wishes it to be. The committee was established this year on September 18th when we selected folks for the committee, and then we started meeting after that. And as I already mentioned, we had several meetings, several iterations of what I'm about to go through, a lot of debate and deliberation, and I really want to thank everybody one more time. The reason why we're doing this is we are mandated by bylaw to do it. We just didn't decide to do this, like, it's part of our process, and that's something that I have to lead as the chair. However, most of the planning and organization is thanks to our human resources manager, Ellen. I really want to thank her. Finally, this document it kind of reflects a new mode of thinking, of strategic thinking throughout the organization. We are now really seriously considering pushing strategic thinking into our businesses and our services over the long term. VP Ripka is working on some of those, along with VP Bourgeois. It's been fantastic thus far. And hopefully we can have more long-term, thought-out, data-driven decision-making throughout the organization long-term. So, jumping into what has actually changed. So if you have the document in front of you, something that we have to have in it with our mission, vision, and value. That is the first major page there. What I want to say is that there has been, we have made some changes, and I want to really kind of focus on this because changes to the mission, vision, and values basically will dictate how a lot of the broad scope decision-making processes that we use will go through. And once I'm just going to pull it up, because I have the notes about exactly what has been updated or changed. I just don't have them right in front of me. The changes are small, however, very important, because this is the filter for how we make decisions largely within the organization. Further, we have tried to use simpler and like updated language. The old version had some proliferous language, had some jargon in it. We've tried to pull as much of that out as we can. And then finally, to really point something out that I think is probably the most important, is we changed one of the values. Values are one of the things that we really center ourselves around. It's one of the things that I use to make decisions every day. So the one thing that changed was we used to have a value that was plan for tomorrow. That has been reflected to be learn from the past to improve tomorrow. Plan for tomorrow didn't seem like it was really rooted in enough history about where did the students even come from or what
what has been its legacy. We wanted to ensure that we were reflective within this process, not just totally forward thinking. Now, I'm going to pause here and just see if anybody has any questions or if they've had an opportunity to look at the document. Cool. If not, I'll keep powering forward. The critical success factors and strategic goals are the rest of the document. This was almost entirely reworked. However, there are still the same amount of sections, and the sections more or less reflect the same sort of breakdown, which are the four at the bottom there. And when I say reworked, they were almost entirely put into a new standard as format. The old strategic plan, each point kind of had different systems of writing, as well as had like random little subsections to them, and generally didn't follow a full standardized format to make it easy to read. We've changed that to be what you have in front of you. They're more high level. High level is kind of a weird term. They're more, they're broader. They're meant to encompass more of what the organization does instead of focusing exactly on one or two things. That's my take on it anyway. Members of the committee can correct me if they feel differently. I do think that there's more of the why baked into it. Like, why would we suggest we do this instead of just, oh, this is a strategically good thing to do and maybe it'll grow our businesses or our advocacy or whatever. We kind of said, well, why should we do that? Which is reflected within a lot of the details within there. I'm not going to read it all out. There's a lot of stuff there, but the four main critical success factors or like themes being empowering our students, building our relationships, strengthening our organization, and serving all students. This language was actually also selected to reflect the ongoing rebrand effort of the Students Union, which is, this is your Students Union, so this is our strategic plan. That is the decision for a lot of that as well. Next steps for this, and this is why I said this is a very brief, broad presentation. I'm presenting to you today, and you've gotten a copy of the rough draft. From here, we're going to solicit feedback all the way up to March 1st-ish, dependent on how much feedback we get. For that, we are going to put up online by the end, hopefully tomorrow, I'm going to try and push to get it done, an online feedback form, as well as place the rough draft document on the website under the strategic plan section. So that way you have something to share with all of your constituents and with anybody who's interested in giving feedback on this. And that you can also use that mechanism yourselves, or you can give feedback today or at any other of our ongoing council meetings. I'll likely put a discussion, and this is just for feedback for all of you, I'll likely put a discussion item under general orders on every council meeting going forward that is the strategic plan draft document. So that way we get as much of your input as possible, as this is going to be something that you have to adopt. The committee is on pause right now because we have completed this draft and we're like, well, we won't write anything more until we get feedback. So the committee will reconvene on March 21st and start reviewing the feedback that's coming in and see what we can do. My hope, and this is I think it's a pretty standard date, is to have a motion in front of council by the 26th of March, which is to adopt a strategic plan. The wording of it won't be the completed, like, marketable document, but we'll present the wording for you all to deliberate or adopt or to amend. That would be at the time when we would have a larger debate within these chambers. If we get it here before March 26th, that also allows us a few meetings before the end of our term, so that way we have some breathing room if we want to say, nope, we want this to go back to committee for a review, and please then bring it back. And so everybody's aware, I already mentioned this, but we are going to start working on internal strategic plans going forward. Those will be things that will also get reported to council. They're not necessarily in the mandate for this, but there's something that I think is valuable. As well, metrics. We will be working with all of our departments after council has deliberated and approved a document that we can then approach all of the internal departments and be like, okay, so how does this work for you? How will you achieve this, basically? We don't really want to force everybody to do that before we've actually developed the plan. Any questions, concerns right off the bat?
As already put, said, there will be a feedback form posted online. It's a long document, so I didn't really expect everybody to like come with huge lists of stuff. So if you want to send me an email with any feedback you have, we'll also have plenty of opportunity to deliberate within these chambers. But right now, anything?
Oh, Robert?
Thank you for the presentation. I'm extremely proud of the work that we've done, not to like toot my own heart too much, but I think that the committee's worked really hard and we're happy to be here presenting to you all. Can you discuss the process in which we came to those four categories, because they changed a little bit, and we went through some, we had like six or seven at one point, then we merged some of them together.
Yep.
Can you maybe discuss how we arrived at those four a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. So, as mentioned, there's been a lot of iterations. It's hard to, I don't actually have it all in my memory. I missed one or two of these meetings as well. What's important is that we did try to compact it as much as possible. Robert's not wrong. We did have several, like, honestly started with several different random things. Our committee slowly but surely said, that's too much. It's too much to read. It's too much to handle. Let's try and compact it as much as possible. One thing and one suggestion that we did discuss for a long time were strategic imperatives. So the things that are already in here, so empowering students and all these themes, are I would call like the critical success factor statements. We also thought, well, what are the strategic factors that are just important overall? One thing that's really important and will be important is the ongoing rebranding of the Students Union. It's something that's already been invested in, but it doesn't really fit into like a specific thing. It's just general, like everything is just getting touched by that. We kind of ended up not having that in here, mostly because we thought, well, let's just try and get it all within the document itself. Robert, I don't know if you want to add anything, because I think you have a better sense of what you want to add.
I don't remember all the ones that we had. Maybe we had like six or seven different of those keys that are the critical success factors. But I was just going to say, yeah, we worked hard to really make this document as concise as possible and try and include as many points kind of within each one. So we wanted to see.
I want to iterate. I would really appreciate everybody reading through this. And one thing to look out for in particular is jargon. If there's something you don't understand that needs to get pointed out, because we need to rework that statement again. Because this needs to be communicatable to everybody. It's going to be public facing.
I'm not sure if you touched this or not, but can you just let council know how long that strategic plan will be in effect for?
5 years. It's reviewed in like it's technically reviewed in the fourth year, and then it comes into effect when council ratifies a new one.
So thank you for your presentation.
Yep.
I was reading the document. I thought it looked really good.
This is just a personal recommendation of sorts.
Yeah.
I quite like when, especially like the pillars and everything are very like almost poetic in nature. I like it when they have like when the throwbacks to nature, like blossom or flourish, things like that.
I think there are other ways that we could change the language of it if you have suggestions, Locks.
Inspires.
For the world.
Any other comments, folks? If not, we'll call it quits there. I do.
I do want to stress that it is quite important to read this document in full and to critically analyze it. It is going to be the operational plan for the Students' Union for 5 years, and I see Luke's got a comment too.
I didn't put up my hat before because I didn't want to shoot my own horn, unlike somebody else. So I'm just going to stay quiet on that. But I think that a lot of work's went into it. Robert mentioned the critical success factors, and that was originally something we were going to put straight in the document. Also, when President Larson said that we had various drafts that weren't working, it's not just simply that we have different iterations of the same sort of format. We had an entirely different formats we were testing out. And the one we currently see before you is the one we felt read the best and best covered as many different areas the Student Union is responsible for and wants to give attention to. But like kind of echoing again, once again, President Larson, is just the importance of student council to read through this and give feedback, because this is the document that governs the organization. And since student council is essentially the board of governors, or not board of governors, board representatives that is in charge of the entire organization and its executives, when you criticize or keep us accountable or the current execs accountable in the future, this would be one of the documents you would definitely do it by. And if we're failing to meet one of these points we wrote out, that would be something that we brought forward. So if there's any additional things you think are missing or any critiques or things we put in there, like that, this would definitely be an important time to do that, since this is the next 5 years of the organization and how it behaves and serves students.
Perfect.
Cool.
Thanks, folks.
All right, with that, we'll take attendance and go for our recess. President Larson.
Here.
Vice President Badnyar.
Present.
Vice President Brown.
Here.
Vice President Ripka. Vice President Bourgeois?
Yes.
Governor Plowman?
Here.
Councilor Lynn?
Yes.
Councilor Anderson?
Yeah.
Councilor Raitt?
Here.
Councilor Mwale?
Here.
Proxy for Councilor Hosseini?
Here.
Councilor Bilak?
Here.
Councilor Cunard?
Here.
Councilor Lee?
Here.
Councilor Hussein?
Yes.
Councilor Stapp?
Here.
Councilor C?
Here.
Councilor C?
Here.
Councilor Ansari is in the live stream. Councilor Yao? Councilor Rosalind? Councilor Bose? Councilor Bose? Where is he? Over there? Councilor Adwan? Councilor Hennessey? Councilor Chung from live stream? Councilor Ahmad? Councilor Sunday?
Hi.
Councilor Nguyen? Councilor Izuki?
Yeah.
Councilor Hadoosh? Councilor Kim?
It's not like anything happened.
Councilor DePinto?
Here.
Councilor Agarwal?
Here.
Speaker's business. I am going to special order items, question 6B and item 8A on the main agenda. I'm not going to special order question 6A because it has been responded to already. The other questions from the late additions and the items from the late additions are going to be moved on to the main agenda. All right. That concludes our presentations for this evening. We'll move into executive committee reports. Are there any members of the executive who wish to make a report? President Brown.
Hey, Mr. Speaker. Hello, everybody. A couple things to mention. So our candidate meetings are still going quite well. We have meetings with MLA Layla Goodrich, who is also an alumni at Campus St. John, so looking forward to that, as well as David Dorward, who's the UCP candidate in Edmonton Gold Bar. So looking forward to those. I've been working on a sort of op-ed article on what's happening with Ontario and their student fee situation that I'm hoping to get into sort of mainstream media shortly. So stay tuned for that. I was out in Winnipeg last weekend, or towards the end of last week, presenting to the University of Manitoba Students Union and meeting with the University of Manitoba Graduate Student Association on CASA. Really well received out there, and I think there's some good relationship building to do in Manitoba. And we've had a CASA's recruitment officer has been making a swing through Alberta as well, mostly looking at grad student associations out here too to help build CASA's membership. So it's been fantastic. Today I was helping out with Get Out the Vote. I think that there's been a fantastic response from students. So again, a huge shout out to Councillor / GoTV Coordinator Riggs for the fantastic campaign. I don't know what number we're at now, but I hope he can...
3,600.
Thank you. So that's been fantastic. Again, hoping to get 5,000 to 6,000 by Election Day. You know, who knows when that is. And just a reminder that I'll be taking a leave of absence from the position starting Thursday evening until March 7th. So any further things that you need from me, please talk to President Larson or VP Gripka. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. We'll next go to Vice President Bourgeois.
Hello, thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple things to remind Council of. This week we are hosting the gender-based violence prevention programming happening in SUP. Some of it has already happened, but Thursday, there will be a missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit march. The gathering time is at 12 in front of Pembina Hall if you'd like to participate. Thursday, we're doing a art gallery event in the lower level of SUP in the Cascade Room, hosted by the Days of Action Committee. And Friday, there's going to be two events. The art gallery will be back, and then the Sexual Health Education Club is going to be putting on a healthy relationships and speed threatening in the lower level. Definitely look forward to that. Also today, the Campus Facility Safety and Security Working Group met, and it looks like that committee will carry on for another year to go over the recommendations in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Bourgeois. Vice President Repka.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, everyone. So in addition to my written report, in which I kind of just talked about the two projects that I'll be focused on in the coming future, which is the Dewey Strategic Plan and the Students Union Catalog, I also mentioned how over the last week I've been doing some of the Student Spaces Levy debrief and talking to all the team members involved, getting their opinions on like what worked, what didn't work, and like what to do for next time to prepare more of a formalized transition document for whoever my successor may be. I will also be coming to council after elections to talk about this, so please do think about it, because the reality is the Students' Union building does need to be maintained, and that's going to be a perpetual problem, so that's a thing. Also continuing work with CERC, the Social and Environmental Responsibility Committee. Our project for the year has been to do an audit of the SWAG, the Students Union gives away, kind of all that stuff that you get throughout the year and do you really use, we don't know, so that's going to continue progress. There's also been concerns, flashback to council a couple months ago when Councillor Hossein brought up concerns about WUSC, which is a student refugee program, and so I've been following up on that, trying to ensure that the students that do come over via WUSC are most well prepared to be successful in their academic life. And then also, a couple of weeks ago mentioned that I'm sitting on the Center LRT Working Committee. So essentially they've decided exactly where this LRT is going to go up until 109th Street, and then they know that it's going to cross the bridge, or cross the river somehow, and then we just need to decide where it's going to go around the university, which is pretty exciting stuff. So there's a bunch of stakeholders from the university, the hospital, the Garneau area, that are all trying to decide where this train will go. So anyways, that's my update. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Rupka. Vice President Batner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this week has been incredibly busy, as it is, I only have a couple days to get a few things done. So COFA, the Council of Faculty Associations, has had all of its meetings this week. So we had Senior Board on Monday, Finance and Administration, and Advocacy Board on tomorrow. The number one thing that we're discussing at COFA is, again, how can we better connect COFA members to Council? There seems to be a big piece of disengagement between like you folks and faculty associations, and so we're trying to find a way to articulate that better. In doing so, we are going to be hosting a COFA joint board meeting sometime after March 15th, and so we are going to invite counselors to that. If you're able to come, that would be amazing. It's going to be for incoming and outgoing counselors and COFA members, so the new FA executives. That way it's going to be a big room, but it's going to sort of act as a way that the Students Union can support transitions. Going forward this week, I'm going to be at the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusivity Strategic Plan launch. So I've been working on this the strategic plan for a year now, and we're finally ready to launch to the campus community. So that's tomorrow at 6:30. I believe I emailed most of you the invitation to that. If you're able to come, that'd be great. And last but not least, there is the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women March on Thursday. Councillor Belcourt has sent most of you Facebook invites, and if not, she will do it right away. And I lied last night, but this is the last thing for sure. The Council on Student Affairs has been a big, big discussion item at both GFC and GFC Executive. And unfortunately, GFC Exec decided to table it once again. And so this council still has undetermined terms of reference. There's a lot of discussion around representative students and not representative students versus elected students. And so going forward, if anyone has any feedback about what they'd like to see on the Council Student Affairs, whether it be elected members only or representative and elected, I would love to hear your thoughts. It's becoming much more contentious than we believed. So I'll be discussing that tomorrow at our transition committee meeting, and that is about it. If you have any other questions, feel free to ask me.
Thank you, Mr. President Battinger. President Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to call attention to a couple of things within my report. First, I was thrilled to be an inaugural member of the University of Alberta's Governance Committee this Thursday. I'm continuing on with my mandate that was started with the Board Ad Hoc Group on Memberships and Mandates. I am actually pretty excited. This is the first time the board has undergone a full governance review in well over a decade, so I'll be trying to close out my work there before end of term. Further, the Board of Governors has had a comprehensive institutional plan update, and it is going to be on the Academic Planning Committee's agenda for this for tomorrow. Generally, things that we know will be in there is a budgeting. The university is budgeting for a 0% increase to the Campus Alberta grant, cut to 2.5% across the board, 2.77% increase in international student tuition, a 5% increase to rent on all residences, and everything else being tied to CPI, with domestic student tuition being frozen. There is also going to be discussion around new policies and procedures for how a lot of these items will come to the board in the future. Something to keep an eye on is that tuition fees, including exceptional fee increases, mandatory non-instructional fees, and international students' tuition, will be things that the board may delegate to the Board of Finance and Property Committee in the future, as those are all being either regulated or legislated by government and are no longer technically in control of the board. Finally, I do want to note that the upcoming election season is something that is very difficult on all candidates, both for executive, for council, and for side campaigns and managers. We just had a talk on Monday from Anita Sarkeesian about the effects of gender-based violence online and sexual harassment online. I want to challenge the folks in this room as leaders here to really keep an eye out for that sort of behavior, in particular on Twitter. I know without a doubt that every candidate who is a woman who has ran in these elections for president in particular has received very graphic threats online or has received sexist comments. It is important to really call out this behavior if you do notice it, or if anybody in your circle ever engages in it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, President Larson. That will conclude our executive committee reports. We'll move into board and committee reports, beginning with Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee. Councillor Sutton.
Good evening, Council. The Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee meets weekly, with its next meeting taking place tomorrow at 1 p.m. This meeting will be jam-packed and include a number of items. We will be approving, hopefully, changes to the acknowledgement of traditional territories. I would like to thank Councillor Cutterham, who, although not a permanent member of ARC, helped me with the consultations. Second, we will be discussing and approving a recommendation letter to cause that will be presented by Vice President Brown and President Larson on behalf of the committee. Last, we will be discussing the ARC recommendations that continue to haunt my dreams because we've been lasting for 2 years. As a reminder, please review the ARC recommendations and provide any feedback that you may have, as this is the last opportunity for Students' Council to do so. In terms of the Students' Council Sweat Lodge, both myself and Councillor Belcourt, in her capacity as President of Aboriginal Student Council, continue to speak with the committee's knowledge keeper, Cheryl McCaucus, to set a firm date. Attached to the late editions is a copy of the Chair's report I provided to a member of the Council Administration Committee as part of its review of council standing committees, realizing that I am currently contravening SU legislation by having not provided a trimester report a few meetings ago. I thought I would attach this report, which I provided to CAC, instead of authoring a new report, which would have the same information. All right, so continuing. On behalf of the Native Studies Student Association President Rhiannon Arcand, I'd like to invite Students' Council to the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Memorial March. The NSSA will be hosting its annual Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Awareness Walk on Thursday, February 14th. If you would like to take part, the march will begin with a pipe ceremony at 11 a.m. The march itself will begin at 12 p.m. in front of Pembina Hall. For more information, please visit the NSSA Facebook page. Last, if anyone is interested in picking up moose hide pins, which are these, please see me when time permits. The Moose Hide Campaign is a grassroots movement of Indigenous and non-Indigenous men and boys who are standing up to violence towards women and girls. So if you would like a pin, please come and see me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sunday. Will the Councillor Staff for Audit Committee?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So Audit Committee had a meeting last week where we restarted the process, rather, of getting everything back on track after the last speaker had to resign. The last chair had to resign of audit. So everything's back on track now, things are rolling along, which is great. Also last meeting, Audit Committee passed a motion to reimburse students that paid fees into the Newton's Place Resident Association last year. Just generally broad overview, although I can take questions later. This was simply because the Residents Association at the time, we didn't feel was serving the students that paid into it effectively, and therefore we felt it was only right for those students to be reimbursed this year. Also, final note for Audit Committee is, as I'll be temporarily stepping down for a couple weeks, starting this Thursday, I've asked Nathan Sunday to chair audit in the interim, which he has agreed to. So in the future reports, Nathan will be doing it until sometime middle of March. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Stapp. Councillor Kim, bye.
Hi, everyone. So just like ARC, Bylaw Committee will be meeting tomorrow at 5 p.m. and we'll be talking about three main things. First one is we'll be reviewing the second principles of Bill 5 regarding the Translation Committee. So this one we'll be talking more about the specifics of how do we want our French Translation Committee to structure, the members in it, and a little bit more details onto it. Second portion will be approval of the first principle of Bill 7, which is regarding changes to the Student Council Standing Order amendment process after recommendation from the Dai Board. And last one will be approving the second principle of Bill 6, which is the changes to SU Oversight, Students' Union, Student Group Oversight First Principles. And that's it.
Thank you, Councillor Kemp. Governor Flowen for CAC.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For anybody who didn't notice, we did finally get our first order of the reusable dishes today, and that's something I hope to continue for the rest of the term. And next steps to kind of go along with that, to follow the lead set by Phyllis Dix and Daily Grind, we might explore getting council as Green Spaces certified. And the remainder of our term will be dealing with the bulk of the presentation that President Larson mentioned earlier with all the recommendations. Our next meeting will be not next Tuesday because it's a reading week, but the Tuesday after that. Thank you.
What?
26.
Thank you, Governor Flanagan. President Larson for Executive Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think I gave this update, so
The biggest thing to come out of executive committee has been that we are going to be sending the general manager to a number of speaking, to a conference in, Massachusetts. It's in America. The purpose of the conference is that, the GMs all to get together from across the country, and we have proposed that Mark speak on behalf of the BSU problem in Canada. He is going to be meeting up with the people from University of Winnipeg to come up with a joint presentation on what the effects this will be in Canada. Further, we're going to be tasking Mark a lot more directly to come up with systems for which we can basically survive a VSU environment. On that note, updates coming out of Ontario look continuously worse and worse every day. The latest, one that's funny, one that sucks. First, all students' unions in Ontario were declared Marxist by the Premier. So that was fun. He did so through an email and through a Twitter chain. Two, it looks more and more and more restricted on how student unions will be able to lever fees in the province. Every day that a new piece of regulation comes out, it looks worse. So we are taking this very seriously. Mark has been tasked to come up with best practices to try and help our colleagues in Ontario, and finally to present at all opportunities how we will be focusing on this as an institution.
Thank you, President Larson. Vice President Ripka for Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee has not met since last week's council meeting. We will be meeting on February 27th at 5 p.m. And there we will be getting a presentation from SU Awards and also discussing the Campus Recreation Enhancement Fund because those are two granting DFUs that we oversee. That is all. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Ripka, does NomCom have a chair? Vice President Bandigar, I think you've been dealing with a lot of their stuff.
Well, there's just no report to be made. We haven't met, but there's a motion on the floor today, which I can explain when we get there. It's in the late notes.
Thank you. All right, then we'll go to Councillor Rates for policy.
All right, so Policy Committee met earlier today, right before our council meeting. Our next meeting will be on March 12th. This is beyond our regular sort of meeting cycle because of concerns around our membership's availability. We will have a meeting on March 12th, and then we'll have a meeting on March 19th, and then we'll conclude the year with a bi-weekly schedule from that point onwards. Within the meeting today, we reviewed second readings of engagement and student employment, so expect to see those coming forward at next council meeting. We also saw a first reading of the Campus St. Jean policy, which I'm really excited to see come forward. We reviewed the equity, diversity, and inclusivity policy, and more review will be going forward in our next meeting. We also received updates on the food policy and the truth and reconciliation policy. Also today was flagged that we had missed three policies in our review, but upon further sort of research, there is just one policy that we are missing within our current work plan. You can see the work plan within the attachments to the late editions, but I'll be covering that with the committee after this meeting to see how we can include the review of the assessment and grading policy within our final 2 months. Look forward to to taking any questions if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Rates. Deborah Flammer from the Board of Governors.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We had a brief special meeting called on Friday. It was in closed session. I can't give details, but once the details become public, I'll have more of an update.
Thank you, Deborah Flammer. So any other members of boards and committees wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll conclude board and committee reports there. Move into open forum. Do any of our guests have questions for members of council? Ms. Turner. What was that?
Go ahead. Hi, this question is for VP Student Life. Just wondering if you could provide any feedback or what your opinion is of the report that was released by Campus and Facility Safety and Security Working Group.
Vice President Bourgeois.
Based on the draft version of the report, because it's not in its final iteration yet, I do have a couple of comments. Overall, I'm generally pleased with the report. However, I feel like they missed a couple of things that I specifically had asked to be included in the report. One of those being that there needs to be more investment from the university in responding to and preventing sexual violence, and that that is an issue of safety that is outside the scope and mandate of the CFSS committee, but nonetheless, I believe should have been included in the report. The other parts in there is that there's no real specific description of how these like education pieces are going to function, which they will have a subcommittee created for it to deal with that piece, but I wish they would have gone into it a little more. And second is that per a comment that they had received in a question from council, there's no real explanation of what measures will be taken to ensure that if there is an increase to staffing for UAPS, how are those officers going to act in a way that is equitable, that makes people feel safe, and that doesn't result in like over-policing or targeting specific people on campus, primarily minorities and marginalized groups. So overall, pleased. Few things that we should have seen changed that weren't, but we'll continue advocating on this.
Thank you, Mr. President Bourgeois. Mark, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for Councillor Belak. What are your thoughts on the standing order review with regards to the discussed nomination piece? I asked this for when I had props for you that one time in August. I almost cost you your nomination by opening my statement saying, I don't really know Robert. So my question is, do you think submitting written nominations will make it more fair so they don't have to worry about getting shitty proxies like me?
Oh, no.
Thank you for like my first ever question in council. So this is tricky. First of all, you did a great job because I got the seat. So kudos. With that though, I do think that there is merit because I think that A, it can be scary to nominate yourself or to nominate somebody for a committee meeting or filling, especially near the beginning when you don't know many people. Additionally, it can take a very long time to get through those processes, especially when we have three or four vacancies in different committees. So I see value in it. I will admit I will miss speaking during the process. I like usually finishing with a joke or something funny. But I think that for the sake of efficiency and for the sake of providing comfort and accessibility to the process, I think it probably is the right thing to do.
Yes.
It's not the same, though.
Thank you, Councilor Belak. Any further questions? Go ahead, Ian.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is for VP Bhatnagar. What progress have you had with regards to Section 3.3 of your VPA platform, support land acknowledgement, incorporation, and syllabi?
Vice President Bhatnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. So we've actually had really cool progress on this piece. So the part was putting land acknowledgements at the start of syllabi. So the Faculty of Pharmacy has piloted this project within their faculty only because they've received a teaching, learning, and enhancement fund. So a professor in that faculty was given a fund because they created a e-class Moodle where professors can basically like create a syllabi by going like plus, 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 plus. And so one of the pieces that he added was the university's official land acknowledgement. I think it's important that the Faculty of Pharmacy is integrating this kind of knowledge into their classroom because now professors who have chosen to opt into putting this acknowledgement on their syllabi are more or less forced by nature of the syllabus to discuss the issue and how it affects the course. So in part, we've accomplished the goal of putting syllabi land acknowledgements on syllabi, but also how to better indigenize course content in terms of the Faculty of Pharmacy. If successful, I'm hoping that the university will create a policy regarding this. But again, opening up the content of syllabi is like a really touchy subject for some professors because it is deemed like academic property or academic integrity. And so they're all like, I want my freedom in terms of my own writing. And so it's been an uphill battle, but thank you to the Faculty of Pharmacy for piloting this.
Thank you, Vice President Batnagar. Mr. Lachette.
This question is for Vice President External. Just the other day, I received in the mail a leaflet from Statistics Canada about a national survey on sexual assault on campuses. Just wondering if you or you as VP External or you in your role as CASA have anything to add about this project?
Vice President Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. I've heard about it as well. Be happy to see the pamphlet, though, or the letter, because I haven't actually seen like what it actually looks like. But I've heard that it's happening. I think it's great that there's basically a willingness on the part of government to generally start collecting information and perspectives on this. CASA's big push this year has been for the government's currently developing. Sexual violence on campus framework to become a national standard that's a little bit more enforceable on campuses. So hopefully we can use this data collecting and what's happening there to better inform or to better navigate us in a way of creating a national standard, because I think at the end of the day that's what we really need. It's great to have a framework where some campuses can say, oh look, this is sort of the ideal thing, but every student across this country basically deserves to have access to the same solid sexual violence programs and services. So that's what we're working towards. But happy to follow up after so I can actually see what this looks like. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. Mr. Kluge, you have another question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is for VP Batnagar again. What progress have you had with regards to Section 2.1 of your VPA platform, create a student census?
Vice President Batnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. So the student census, as outlined in my platform, was a two-folded project, a two-year implementation. So the first iteration of the implementation was launching or relaunching the revamped SU annual survey, in which we asked a very intense series of questions regarding demographic collection. I believe that the survey had over 5,000 respondents, and so that is representative, I guess, of the student body. And the second part of this is I worked with the university this year to launch an internal equity, diversity, and inclusivity survey to the internal staff who are part of Oshawa and NASA. And so once that's been, I guess, it's been launched, and once it's been fine-tuned, the hope is that next year they'll launch it to the university student campus as a whole. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Vice President Batnagar. Any further questions from our guests? Go ahead.
This question is for Vice President Academic. Sorry to put you in the hot seat. So, General Faculties Council, there's been a lot of discussions about how the university is reaching capacity and exploring alternate measures for undergraduate enrollment other than just marks. I was just wondering what the SU's position is on the university employing different measures to discriminate different candidates for university enrollment.
Vice President Batnagar.
Thank you for the question. The Students' Union has no official stance as of yet. Something that the executive team has to discuss, I guess, in more fulsome. But the discussions at GFC have typically been that the U of A is, I guess, at capacity in terms of space, but there's still students or people who are in the secondary school system who want to come to university, and so we have low participation rates in that sense. Going forward, I think it'd be really cool for the University of Alberta to look at a more multifaceted approach of admissions, whether it be through incorporating your personal experiences from high school and your grades in high school, but there's no, I guess, official student union position on this yet. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Vice President Batnagar. Any further questions from our guests? Seeing none, we will conclude open forum there. Move into question period. Beginning with Councillor Sunday.
My question is to the Vice President Academic. At a previous Students' Council meeting, I asked the Vice President if there has ever been an Indigenous person on the Executive Committee. Could the Vice President provide an updated answer to this question? Thank you.
Vice President Batnagar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. To update you on whether there has ever been an Indigenous student as part of the executive, in terms of the research we've done, there has not been a self-identifying Indigenous student as part of the executive committee in at least the past 40 years. Our research and advocacy team has been looking into it, but it's almost hard to track if any executive was self-identifying, as that's not information that we necessarily collected or was made public when the candidate was deciding to run and was successful. From our understanding. Okay, there likely was, according to President Larson. We just are unsure about who that person might have been.
It's not something we can prove.
Can I defer the rest of my time?
President Larson, I'll let you answer.
Thank you for the question. It's a harder research question than it appears because there was no method for people to declare their self-identifying Indigenous. So it's like we have to track them down and check their history. From our understanding, there likely was, Mark DeMichel believes that there was, our general manager, but we can't definitively prove it. That being said, that's a pretty low bar, no matter what, that if we can't find it, point it out anyway. So I would just go with the answer of no for now.
Thank you very much. Councillor Hiddish.
Hello, I have a question for VP Student Life. I'm just curious as to why your reports are always on the late editions. I feel like it's making it a bit tricky for some people to keep up with your portfolio.
President Bourgeois.
Yeah, thank you for the question. This one ended up on the late ads, frankly, because I've had a really, really tough couple of weeks. Last week was very heavy, and I had to do with things like student mental health, and I'm sorry that it's been.
Councillor Sunday.
My question is for the Vice President, Operations and Finance. In their oral report, the Vice President discussed focusing on the Dewey's strategic plan. Is RAT currently looking at doing a strategic plan as well?
Ms. Rybka.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. In my capacity as the role that oversees RAT, there is no plan to do one in the next 3 months simply due to a time constraint, and because RAT's made quite a bit of progress, I think, over the past year or two in terms of their brand image. They got a facelift with like the tables and the new mural and stuff, so overall it is doing well. We're kind of going to use the strategic plan for Dewey's as a test case. If it does go well in terms of transitions of executive teams and stuff like that, and isn't just work that won't actually be continued, then I would love to see it go over to like RAT and the other business units as well. But overall, RAT is not in the plan as of yet.
Thank you, Mr. Rybka. Councillor Sunday, your final question.
My question is to the President. Could the President provide an update to Student Council on the hanging of a Treaty 6 flag in the Students' Union building or around campus?
President Larson.
Thank you for the question. Yeah, this was a topic that I started chatting with Councillor Sunday and Councillor Belcourt, I would say 6 months ago, if not longer. We made a pretty big push about 4 months ago to get in contact with some folks from Indigenous communities and nations to see if this was something that we could go forward with, all the way to the point where we were discussing with our internal management how that would work and where the buildings would go, yada, yada, yada. And then I got a lot of feedback from a number of folks. One was, don't fly flags without the nation's express consent, which makes a lot of sense. Two, make sure if you are going to do something like that, that the proper ceremonies take place. So don't just assume that like your way of hanging flags is the way to hang flags. Like that there is procedures to hang flags within buildings. And three, just get in contact with the right people first. So that kind of killed it before before Christmas. Since then, I tried reaching out to a number of band offices, a number of folks, did some phone calls, but haven't got a call back. The latest iteration of how we might move forward on this subject is to for me and Councillor Bellcourt from our last conversation to do a little bit more direct reach out. Maybe literally I just have to physically go to one of these offices and see if I can find somebody to talk to. We'll give that a go. That's for hanging these flags in our own building, the spaces that we control. As far as flying other flags on campus, I haven't gotten a pretty like a clear response from anyone. I've taken this all into facilities and operations and haven't really received an update as to how or why. The biggest thing that I've received is that we fly all of Canada's, we fly the flags in a way that they're meant to, I don't understand this process, the way that they're meant to be flown in Canada. And so that's like the ones that are on the main central building. The only place on any university campus for the Métis and first Métis flag is flown is at Augustana, which is the one thing I did manage to find out.
Thank you, President Larson. Councilor Hadouche.
I have a question for the VP academic. In relation to Mark's previous questions, I was just like really curious as to how you get so much shit done.
Oh. Vice President Batty.
Thank you for the question.
We should
ask. Honestly, yeah, I don't know. I just work hard and have a really good team to support me and work really hard. Thanks. I don't know what to say.
Councillor Cunard. Quiet down, please.
All right, this is to President Larson. Regarding your comments about the two flags, have you thought about reaching out to the faculty of Namesite since they do have protocol for this kind of thing already, since they have to have the same thing for teaching Cree, and they are given the same feedback about going to talk to elders and stuff. So they can be very helpful when it comes to this.
President Larson.
This is where I got a good amount of this feedback directly from. It's interesting because I don't want to saddle the Native Studies Department with getting this done. It's something that I should probably try and figure out. Sorry, faculty, my bad, thank you, Nathan. The Native Studies faculty was doing the work. It's something that I think we should try and figure out. And I should take more responsibility for it. But a point well taken, I'll try as we go forward to be more direct and reach out as much as possible.
Yeah, plus there's no any one band that could give you.
Yeah.
We're not planning everything. You could easily talk to the elder in First People's House.
Okay. I'll do a next step.
Thank you, President Larson. Councilor Kim.
Hi, my question is to Vice President Light. So I remember one of the main focus of your platform, remembering that Maya Horowitz's speech was regarding sexual assault and section, and election is coming up again. As of last year's candidate, there's a lot of comments in those sections that many of us expressed afterward and during that you had to go through. And I believe one of your method that you mentioned was hiring a full-time person for a sexual assault center or portions like that. What is your progress on that?
Vice President Bourgeois.
Cool. So I have attempted to raise this issue at basically every opportunity I get. And I did meet specifically with the Dean of Students to ask him why they have not hired this person yet. Their response was fairly typical. We don't have the money to hire this position, which is not an acceptable response. There is also last year published a Restorative Initiatives for Sexual Violence report, which outlines a plan to implement an Office of Restorative Practices on campus. That project is being led and facilitated by the student discipline officers who currently administer the bad, I guess, justice system, if you could call it that students use when they've experienced sexual violence. So those conversations, they met and interviewed President Larson and I on implementing restorative practices, but until they complete their consultations with the entire community, that is put on hold until they can find out what everyone's thoughts are in restorative practices. That being said, I think it's something that should absolutely happen, and it is happening at other universities, so thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Bourgeois. We'll go to Vice President Battier. Oh, sorry, that's a council document.
My question's for VP Student Life. Can you tell me what progress you've had on your platform point about creating spaces for child care on campus?
Vice President Bourgeois.
Yeah, so last week, 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, we met to discuss this actual very point of what would it look like to create a child care facility on campus. That was with the Student Parent Project Committee. Northwest College in the city has a dedicated child care space. However, we were informed by people who run child care facilities that any kind of child care facility that is not basically a fully functioning child care facility would not be able to function on campus. Possible solutions that were identified in there were, hopefully the government expands their $25 per day child care program to accommodate more people. Two, making it easier for people when they apply for university or even when they're learning about applying for university, if you have a child, getting you onto a wait list as soon as possible. Typically, the people that get child care are like university staff, faculty, admin, who are able to plan ahead, but as a student, it's not that easy. So I think what I would recommend the students' union do anyways is look into creating a student parent policy. That would help our advocacy, I believe. And then another thing is that I sat on the Housing for Students Who Parent group, and the outcome of all of the consultation they did on campus was that childcare is the number one most important thing to student parents. So stressing that to universities, yeah, super important. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice President Bourgeois. Councilor Kim.
Sorry, this is just a follow-up question. So you have mentioned that their excuse was, again, money portion of it, which was always a response that we have gotten from it. So advocating to Dean of Students is not something that we can control because it's not our office. Then what can Students' Union do about it when it is such an important issue on campus? Because we might not be able to control the services that is provided by Dean of Students, but we might be able to do something of what Students' Unions, whether we are doing campaign or campaigning or finding up more budget for the services and things like that. What can Students' Union do?
But there's more fun.
So the Students' Union specifically, we have, I guess, the space that is currently occupied by the Dean of Students. We could not renew their lease and replace it with a child care facility if we implemented a designated fee unit to support a fully functioning child care facility in the Students' Union building. That's one option. We could also not renew a lease for another one of our tenants and replace it with a child care facility in the building. We could turn Dewey. Oh, the question you asked, sorry, I thought you were following up on childcare. As far as sexual violence goes, I think I would recommend following up with the, the Sexual Assault Center protested at the board, Senate, and GFC joint committee. I think they made very good demands. There was 10. And I would probably say that if no progress is made, the Students' Union should probably consider organizing some sort of rally in support and with solidarity with victims. The university says no, there's not a lot of options we have outside of raising hell going to the media.
Thanks. Thank you, President Bourgeois. We'll go last question to Councillor Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the and it's just regarding back to the point of the child care facilities and needs. Is there a potential for the Students' Union to look for opportunities to collaborate with existing child care facilities on campus? And whether it's offering spaces or some form of collaboration, to expand those services to also be able to meet the needs of more single parent students on campus.
That's pretty worthwhile.
Sorry, could you just clarify your question? Like, the students union could like provide funding or space or something to complement existing childcare facilities?
Yeah, collaborating with existing childcare facilities on campus that could mean funding, it could mean spaces. Kind of whichever option that is, I suppose, would be up to future exec. But do you think it's something that practically might be a possible solution moving forward?
You know, I'm actually not sure about that. If the SU could collaborate, if those, I don't know who runs those childcare facilities. I don't know if they're government run or if they're university run, what the opportunities are for collaboration, what our capacity is to use the space in sub for childcare. But I can definitely follow up and get back to you. Thanks.
Thank you. We have one person on the speaking list. Is there anyone wishing to extend? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right, we're extending. Councilor Belfer.
Follow-up to the childcare question for VP Student Life. Have you worked, or has there been any collaboration with the Students' Union and the
GSA?
And, also, has there been like any like collaboration with like surrounding daycares, like any like holding of spots? Like, if you're not able to open up a daycare, has there been like communication with that, like holding seats for students at university over
there? President Bourgeois.
Yeah, so the first answer to the question is there collaboration with the GSA. I sit on the Student Parent Project Committee with the VP Labor from the GSA, so we have been actively collaborating. As far as the spaces around campus, all of those spaces are 100% full, and I believe that the wait lists are somewhere in the realm of 18 months, which is pretty unfeasible. So unless there was a significant government or university or student, really, investment in childcare facilities, I don't see them getting expanded. There needs to be some sort of funding to come to support those.
Thank you, Mr. Bourgeois. Any further questions? Go once. Going twice. All right, seeing none, we'll conclude question period there. Move into our business for this evening. We have two items, both under general orders. We have nothing under board committee business. Begin with our item from the late editions. Actually, sorry. Before we go, I missed one thing. There is a question, a written question from the late editions that I have special ordered on that was did not receive a written response. So at this point, I will give Governor Flamin a chance to respond to President Larson's.
A written response.
What's that?
There's a written response.
It was not attached.
Yes, it was.
Oh, it's attached as an information item, not on here. Okay, there is. My apologies, there was a response. In that case, we will move on to our business. So our first item is Batnagar moves to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Chancellor Joint Committee 2019-2020. Is there a second for this motion? Councillor Kim, thank you very much. Mr. President, Batnagar, would you like to introduce the motion? Go ahead.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker. Essentially, I'm bringing this to Students' Council because nominating committee is having a hard time finding its membership. I've asked the Office of Discover Governance to support with this, and truly nobody knows who sits on this committee, so I'll probably be asking you all later because it's just really hard to find. And also, we do have to have a member on this Senate committee as soon as possible, so I just want to put it forward to the council if they want to sit on it. This committee is basically nominating a chancellor, and so essentially they're just going to be looking for someone to represent the university at the level of the Senate. And the Students' Union has to be appointed by the Student Association, or a member of the Students' Union has to be appointed by the Student Association. If you have any questions about what the committee does, please ask me.
Thank you, Mr. President Batnagar. Now I'll open the floor to debates and nominations. We'll begin with Vice President Repka. Brown, sorry.
Hey, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to nominate myself.
Thank you, Mr. President Brown.
Councillor Kim.
Can you clarify like time commitment and things like that? Details.
I'll give you a minute to. Are you good?
Yes.
Go for it.
Yeah. So this is for the chance. I'm just gonna answer. Okay. So the committee is supposed to be meeting, basically interviewing to hire a new chancellor. So it's most likely gonna be on the basis of the entire hiring panel. So essentially, this committee is just gonna be hiring someone to represent the Senate as. Like represent the public interest of the university, presiding over degree conferring ceremonies, chairing the Senate, and act as a voting member of the Board of Governors. And so essentially your job will just be to sit on a hiring panel to do this, and the time commitments are just gonna be decided after the committee has, like after the members have been decided.
President Larson.
To answer that question a little bit more directly, I would say it's around the time commitment of doing like an award adjudication. Like there will be a long, arduous process. You likely will be expected to shift through a number of applications and sit through a number of interviews.
Thank you, President Larson. Any further debate or nominations? Going once. Going twice. Councillor Bielak.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Bowes.
Councillor Bowes, do you accept?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. Any further debate or nominations? Going once? Going twice? All right, we'll close there and move into voting. I'll give each individual who was nominated a chance to speak as to why they would be best fit for this role, following which we will go through a ballot to determine our nominated person. We'll go in the order that the individuals were nominated, beginning with Vice President Brown. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I have had the opportunity as VP External to sit on the Senate of the University of Alberta this year. I have gotten to work with the current Chancellor, Doug Stollery, and see what exactly the role of Chancellor entitles him to do and how he represents the Senate and University to the broader community. So I'd like to sit on this committee that would appoint the next Chancellor, because I have an understanding of how the Senate works, how it serves the University of Alberta, and the kind of person that we'd be looking for as a Chancellor. I think Chancellor Stollery has done an excellent job these last few years. It's the role of Chancellor is completely voluntary or not paid, so you really do have to look for somebody that is a strong community leader who's willing to step up on their own time to help broaden the university's image towards the public, but to also involve the public in the university. So I would look forward very much to helping to find that next Chancellor. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Brown. Logo to Councillor Bowes. Go ahead.
Hello everyone. So yeah, I might not have that much experience and I don't actually know how the Senate works, but the thing is I'm a quick learner and I believe in myself and I think I can do a hell of a good job. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowes. All right, for the purposes of this vote, a plus will go to Vice President Brown, a minus will go to Councillor Bowes. It's not on yet. And it's now open. Plus for Vice President Brown, a minus for Councillor Bowes. If you're in the live stream, you can send me the name of the individual you'd like to vote for. And we'll close voting in 3, 2, 1. The successful individual is Councillor Bowes. All right, that concludes that item. We'll return to our main agenda. Ripken moves to appoint four members of council to the Executive Compensation Review Committee. Is there a second for this motion? Councillor Stapp, thank you very much. Vice President Rook, would you like to introduce the motion?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the Executive Compensation Review Committee is the one that we talked about last council meeting. So the schedule will be decided by the members themselves, so we're not set in stone yet. I'm guessing that we'll probably have around three meetings in total, so not a huge time commitment. It'll just be to go over the data from other organizations as to what the compensation packages look like, and then formulate a recommendation to the general manager, or with the general manager, and then eventually to council, should there be any changes necessary to compensation. So, yeah, please ask me any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. President Ripken. I'll open the floor to debate and nominations. Mr. President Ripken.
I would like to nominate Councillor Rates.
Councillor Rates, do you accept?
I accept.
Councillor Lee.
I nominate Governor Flamin.
Governor Flamin, do you accept?
Sure.
Mr. President Bourgeois.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Hadouche.
Councillor Hadouche, do you accept?
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Vice President Ripka.
I would like to nominate Councillor C.
Councillor C, do you accept? President Larson.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Bowles.
Councillor Bowles, do you accept?
Yes.
Oh,
oh my
God.
That's cool.
Vice President Bourgeois.
Councillor Anderson.
Councillor Anderson, do you accept?
I'm going to decline. There's a lot on the table.
Councillor Anderson. Governor Flanagan.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Sunday.
Councillor Sunday is no longer here.
Oh.
Any further? Oh. Governor Flamin.
Councillor Cutter.
Councillor Cutter. Do you accept? Councillor Cutter.
What?
You have been nominated to the Executive Compensation Review Committee. Do you accept?
Can I think about it? I'm sorry, I just got here from the bathroom.
Yes.
Thank you.
Councillor Agarwal.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Adwan.
Councillor Adwan, do you accept? Any further debate or nominations?
On the
live stream we have Councillor Chung, Councillor Bruce, Councillor Ansari.
And Joe.
And whoever Joe is. Councillor Cutterham, have you made your decision?
Sure.
You guys are going to make this very hard. Any further nominations or debate? Going once. Going twice. All right, we'll close nomination debate there. So, as is by our standing order, this will be done in the order of preferential ballot. So, I will put the names up on the board. What I would like you to do is get out a piece of paper, write the names in the order that you wish to see them. I will then run it through our little program, and the top four candidates will sit on the committee. I will. They'll get their chance to speak, too, once they get their names up on the board. Speeches. We'll begin in the order that they were nominated, beginning with Councillor Raitt, who each get 2 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I just like to start, I believe I'm a really good fit for this committee. I've extensively reviewed and researched these positions in anticipation of running last year and have worked alongside the executives this year as they get out the vote campaign coordinator. So I understand the roles very well and I know what they're putting into this. I have an understanding of their working hours, what duties that entails and how this impacts them personally. And so I think that's a really important baseline understanding, which I have. I also have a general understanding of some of the limitations that some students may face when running for or fulfilling the duties of an executive, but more importantly, I'm really interested in hearing and connecting from those who may directly face these limitations, and most importantly, like, I'd love to be sitting alongside these voices as well at the table, or bringing their perspectives to the tables. I'd be really eager to be on this committee, and also, just to be clear, I do not intend on running for SU executive this year. I feel like that's just something we should all say, just to make sure there's no conflict of interest. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Raitt. Governor Flatt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Like Councillor Raitt, I too used to be a vice presidential candidate once upon a time. I also hadn't served on this committee because it hadn't existed, but I served kind of in this role when we reviewed executive compensation last time. Similar to Councillor Raitt, I've also done a lot of research into the role, and I've been around several executive committees now, so I have a fair idea of the type of work involved and how to hopefully compensate them accordingly while balancing the fiduciary duties of the organization, because a significant chunk of our fees do come from students. And I also declare that I'm not planning on running for executive either.
Thank you, Governor Flanagan. Councillor Hiddush.
All right, so I have never ran for an executive position. However, I am very interested in making things fair for everyone, so especially marginalized communities or people who, like me, may have scholarship who prohibits them for taking a year off, which would also like be part of this. So just to make sure that everyone gets like equal benefits for what they're putting in. Something that really interests me, and I was on finance committee when this first came up, and I definitely spoke in favor of it, and I was very interested in the logistics of this committee, and so I would just love it if you guys would put me on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Hiddush. Councillor Seat.
Thank you for the nomination, VP Ripka. I'm not running for SU exec, obviously. I care about people, and I'd be honored to be on this committee. And I am the VP of Finance and the ESA, and I'm also on the audit committee. So I have some experience with money and salary things. So this would be an awesome, I guess, addition to what I'm already doing. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor C. Councillor Bowes.
Thanks for the nomination, President Larson. First of all, I'm not running for any exec position, obviously. And the other thing is, I'm just good with numbers, and I have been doing great in my stats class so far. So I'm going to be a really good fit in this committee. So yeah, vote for me, please.
Thank you, Councillor Bowes. Councillor Cutter.
Thank you to whoever nominated me. I didn't catch that as I was coming in. But like the others, I'm also not running for SU, and I don't believe I have plans because, like Councillor Hiddush, I have limitations. So I would like to run because I am nosy, and plus I also want to make sure that like they're fairly accommodated for the work that they do, because I know like they do work long hours, and it would just it says that their fees don't rise with inflation, so I understand that, seeing as how my treaty money has not raised from $5, so I'm feeling it. So yeah, thank you. Sorry. Sorry, real nervous,
real laughing. Thank you, Councillor Carr. All right, please take the opportunity to write these names down, please. You'll have these options, and you also have none of the above as an option as well. Please write the 7 possible choices in the order which you prefer.
Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
This is the last point of business.
This is the last item of business.
Are you going to send these results in an email, Mr. Speaker?
I am. Don't worry, I got you. I got you. Once I get all your ballots, I'll take attendance, I'll get send you out, and I'll send the results as an email. Yes.
Because there's only 4 seats, don't we just write 4 people?
Nope.
Oh.
You put all of them. Just like, for example, in executive election, there's only 1 president, but you still put a preference for all the people. You don't have to. That's the thing. You do not have to put everyone. However, you can put up to 7 choices, the 6 names on the board plus none of the above. Live stream, you can either send it to me as a private message or you can send me an email. The choice as well for those of you in the live stream. Those of you in person, please give me a hard copy. Does anyone not have paper?
I'm not on the listing.
Yeah.